Self-worth is the unlock.
Welcome to the Self-Care Savage podcast. I'm Scott. I've traveled full-time as a nomad for the last 5 years in my truck, living minimally, hiking, exploring as part of my therapy to heal my mind, body, and soul, becoming a self-care savage, and creating a platform through social media to hold myself accountable and show my progress through and how I live it. This podcast, we will push deeper into my history with all the gory details to all the amazing moments rediscovered as I've healed and forgiven myself and cleared the path to forgive others. In today's episode, we're going to talk about my mom. My mom was the biggest influence there was through my life, the most constant person that was always there. There's so many great memories that were buried through all of the chaos that was going on in my life, that until I started healing and forgiving through all this process, I didn't remember. For example, one about a country and western legend. We also talk about my grandpa a little bit, who was a gambler, to show a little bit of how my mom was, what environment she grew up in. So the best way to understand what's going on with my mom in this episode is let's just get into it. Okay. So what I'm going to talk about is now my mom, and in this time period of when I was born up through, you know, 1970, that first decade of my life. But so, you know, we got into my dad and had a little bit more understanding about him. With my mom, I'm going to set it up a little bit with her history, just because I think it's really important with her. She's the most complex one in this. And she, even though my dad was, you know, that monster in my life for so many years growing up, my mom was the constant influence. She was the one that actually I look at now versus after I've healed and forgiven with my dad, I realized that my mom was actually the biggest influence on every aspect. So anyway, she's the third child of three, and three girls. Now, her mom was a very verbally type abusive woman, but this was her mom's second marriage to the older girls. My mom's older sisters were from a previous marriage. So this is kind of setting up the dynamics of trailing these things back and understanding probably what influenced them a lot in their relationships. And my dad, too, he came from a broken, you know, they were divorced and that kind of stuff, too. So, and this is in those days where there wasn't so much of that as there is now, or even back when, you know, this is early stuff. So my mom did not even know that these were her half-sisters until she was, way into her probably 50s, until she got some information and understood from a cousin or something happened, and she trailed it back and found out that that her mom was previously married and her sisters were half-sisters. Now, her half-sisters, I think they were relatively close as girls, but they both died early in their lives. One died of cancer. She was a nurse. She was the kind of nurse that never went to see the doctor. So the cancer, when they caught it, it was very late. So she didn't have a chance after that point. You got to remember, this was in the 70s. And I remember her visiting a couple of times and just, you know, watching that process. And a lot of times their mind goes first. But anyways, there's that occurred with her, the middle one of the three, which, and then the oldest one died in the 60s. And I don't remember the exact time period. I remember parts of it because we went to the funeral, which was back in the Midland, Odessa area. But this was an even more complicated one. She was killed. She was married to, you know, she was into the abusive type men and things like that. And even though we went to the funeral, my sister and I were kept at the hotel. Somebody watched us there. We couldn't go to the actual funeral because my mom presents it in a way that her husband was in prison for killing her. And now it's debatable because she had some physical issues that caused some her to have seizures of some kind. Anyway, she died while having a seizure of some kind, or again, he got in trouble because he had the history of the abuse that they felt he was a big part of it. Either he didn't do anything to help her, or he induced it or caused it. But she died in the bathtub in scalding water. That was what killed her, was hot scalding water. And again, drowning and all that. But that was, again, I can't put together exact. I don't have all that. But this is the stories behind that. But the reason my sister and I didn't go to the funeral, we were so little, I understand, because the her husband they brought from prison in handcuffs and all that to come to the funeral. So that's the story. It's not going to make a lot of sense because I don't have, these are details. There's nobody that I can get that from anymore. But it can be validated in the part that I do have from my sister and things like that. So that was that was kind of what went on with her a little bit in her life. And I know that she was married to my dad at that time. And I think that was, kind of a blow, a big blow to her. But that's a little bit about her history. Now, my granddad, real quick, this is another interesting story. So his name was Vito. And he was a little guy. My mom was only 5'1"-ish at best. And he was a little guy. He was, and I've got pictures of him. He's got jet black hair, and it's that hair that comes down on your forehead pretty good. I mean, he is, you look at him and he's, or look up Italian, what Italian men look like from the 1930s, 40s, and 50s, and his picture's going to be there. Now, he didn't really claim that Italianism and just this is the quick story around that. So his people were what I can trail back to is from Alabama and things like that. I can't find much about where they came from. At some point, I will take deep dives into that later on to trail that. That's not of interest with what's happening in my life now. But what I do know is there were some pictures found. And so I found a picture of him when he was very, very young in my mom's chest or whatever it is she had, that those trunks they kept and, you know, with all their little keepsakes, you know, as they all through their life, that's what they used to do. But I found an old picture of him, and on the back of it, so my mom's maiden name is Narrell, Narrell. I don't know if that needs to go in here or not, but I don't know how else to say it. So Narrell. Yeah. So Narrell, that was her maiden name. But I found this picture, and it was when he was younger. And on the back, it said Vito Narrelli, Narrelli. So it looks like as though he changed his name. And he did. You know, didn't want to be looked at. Because, again, remember, they ended up in West Texas. I'm not sure how much you know about Texas, but Pecos, Midland, they're all small dirt towns. And back then, it was a lot of oil stuff that went on, things like that. But he was a gambler, big-time gambler. Anytime I remember going and visiting him, which wasn't often, but when we went back to Pecos, he was, he would always open his trunk, take me and my sister around to his, the trunk of his vehicle and, open the trunk. And it, there was just mounds of playing cards in there. And he would just hand me and my sister a deck of cards. So, but again, his history was as a gambler. He was very entrepreneurial. He owned the motel that was in Pecos, Texas, which is still there. It's called Roper's Motel. This is back in the 50s. That's where my mom worked when she was in high school and stuff. They had a little cafe and all that. So she waited on tables. And that's the other piece to connect here is that my dad was working as a lineman at that time, or he was a little, I think maybe a supervisor position, but they were, again, the more remote areas is where they were putting power lines in mostly because they were, you know, trying to stay ahead of populations and things were growing in certain areas. But he was staying at the Roper's Motel while they were working in that West Texas area. So that's how they met was when she was working in that cafe. Now, I say she worked there through high school. She worked there through high school, but she was actually back from college. She went to Texas Tech for 2 years. That's where she was. That was her where she got married. That was her first marriage while she was in college. But she came back after that. I don't know what that was connected to it. When they divorced or whatever, there's no information about that. But she ended back up in Pecos, back there working. So she that's where she met my dad. So so that ties that a little bit. But he was he died in the early 70s. Nobody knows the reasons why, but there was a lot of suspicion back then with gamblers, especially back in those days. This is, again, the history. When you start trailing these things back, you start understanding about the person and what they were into, and then you understand what things were like. And back then, it was just so different. So, but they had partners. Gamblers usually had a partner because they kept their stashes in certain places. If somebody got something happened to one of them or they got busted or whatever was going on with them, the other could get to their stuff to get them taken care of or whatever. So that was kind of how it worked in those days. He used to go to Dallas a lot from there, from what I understand, played a bunch of card games. But he owned that motel, and he ended up owning the dance hall, and he ended up owning a car dealership in Pecos. So he was from what I understand, he was amazing with – had a very giving spirit. So this is, again, when you find out these things and the tragedy around things, and maybe your family members are a little on the gangster side. That doesn't mean they're not sweet. And that doesn't mean they don't care about people. But he had a reputation from what I could trail back from. Knowing some of my mom's older high school friends that she still had contact with that I met, they always talked about Vito. He was the guy that with all the guys on the football team they were in high school. He was the guy that if they were poor, they needed uniforms, shoes, whatever they needed. He was the first one that was there, and it was usually a lot of times just under the table. It wasn't like open and looking for any recognition. So he was very giving with what he did with that. So there's I didn't know him very well, but because it was when I was like maybe 8 or 9 when he died, but. He, you know, there's that. And again, the contrast with that is that he was married to my grandma, who did not have that reputation. And she was one of those women, I think, wanted to be the center of attention and wanted to be that socialite kind of thing. But it's kind of hard to do in those kind of towns. Just a little history on my mom. She was she played every sport. There was not a sport she didn't play. Got pictures of her in every uniform. She was a cheerleader, and again, she was beauty queen. It wasn't called Miss Pecos back then because it was such a small town, but she was Miss Cantaloupe, because Pecos is famous for cantaloupes. If you trail back anything, the best cantaloupes and all that, they're actually from Pecos, Texas. So she was Miss Cantaloupe, and I've got that clipping with her on the, you know, the thing with that. So she very intriguing upbringing for her, and around those things. Again, I'm not so sure where, and can't identify the men issues with this and why, you know, because I'm sure there was a lot of chaos. She didn't get along with her mom, and it just sounds like it, but again, my granddad was that way. Again, you just never know. So I don't know so much, but that's just a little history here. What was I going to tell you? Oh, so anyways, dad and her got married. They traveled a little bit in a camper, RV of some kind back then, because he was still, you know, they did, these jobs they did were for months at a time. So back then they pulled some kind of trailer, and that's what was the first part of their marriage. Until my sister was born in 1959. And then they kind of, that's when they kind of, as I did talk about with, I think with my dad and some issues with that, especially for him. So he never expected to have kids. Again, he was shipwrecked in cold ocean waters for a couple of days before they were rescued. Doctor told him he couldn't have kids. When my sister was born, he didn't, or not born, when my mom told my dad that she was pregnant, he didn't receive that very well, because his first reaction is, you're screwing around on me, blah, blah, blah. And I don't know why I said blah, blah, blah. But he, you know, he was, that was part of his personality, was to react. And again, he was an alcoholic. I don't know exactly what happened, but again, the story is that he put a pretty severe beating on her until they finally went and got tested and understood that he was capable of having children. So my sister was born. Again, the relationship with women is very complicated with my dad, and I can't really go that deep in it, but my sister was never a physical target of my dad's, of his alcoholic rages. It was my mom until I was born. And so obviously there was more something going on with that. And I think it was more of jealousy, because I think my mom, she was more partial to boys, to men. And a lot of that is also from history uncovered through things with her. And she was very much, even though she played all these sports and did all this stuff, was a beauty queen and all that, she was a tomboy. And she preferred, from the history and talking to these old friends and stuff of hers from back then, that's what she wanted to do, was go, you know, Pecos's big sand dunes. And she just wanted to go run out there with them and do whatever they were doing out there and, you know, play the sports and do all that. And this leads into, with my dad never being around hardly. And when he was, it was again the monster. But my mom is the one who taught me how to throw a football. My mom is the one who taught me how to ride my bike. She was, and that's what she liked to do. When she was married to my dad, she didn't work because he wouldn't have any of that. And so she, again, being, she would never stood still, was very active. But she, there was a bowling alley that was built down from where we lived. And I've got a lot of different stories about that too, but she ended up loving bowling, and she actually, and I have clippings and I have pictures of this, she became a semi-professional bowler. So this is, and again, you know, it's interesting around that, an exceptional bridge player. So my point being is, you put my mom somewhere, she's going to excel in those competitive kind of ways. That was part of, I think, what was dangerous with her and all these men, including my dad, and even the later men that were very abusive as well, was there was no submission with my mom. So she was all, you know, she'd fight back. So there was just a lot of that vinegar in her that comes from, I know from, again, the research of those where she grew up and that environment. It was just, you know, it's a tough, it's just a tougher world. And if you're if a tomboy, you're very, she was extremely aggressive when she wanted to be. I always like to use the word assertive, but with her, there was a lot of aggressiveness. So she got all that entrepreneurial spirit from my granddad and all that, I believe. And I will talk about that later in the '70s when she was blossoming into a therapist. If we get there. But during these times when I was born, this information now is coming from my sister because again, she's older and she has a little bit more memories around things. But the problems with my sister and my mom were a lot because my mom was neglecting my sister. And it was a lot because I think the dynamics of what was going on with my dad. And then my dad was jealous of me. And so this is a lot of these dynamics, these parents we have, these adults that they don't know, they're not doing anything to help themselves, but they don't know how. Again, you have to remember that these people come from a different time. This is not letting anybody off the hook. But all that Beaver Cleaver stuff is a lot of Beaver Cleaver stuff. You know, all of that stuff, there was a lot of that, a lot more than now probably. But most of it, you don't know what's going on behind closed doors. You know, most people would have thought, you know, when my parents were together or we went somewhere or did something when I was little that, you know, look, the presentation was there. My every other Saturday, well, clockwork, until my parents finally divorced, I was at the barbershop with him. He always had a flat top. But I was at the barbershop with him. I never had anything from the day I was born until my parents divorced. I never had anything but a buzz. It was always, you know, I was just a, what do they call it, toe-headed boy or whatever it is. And I think that's, and I was in the sun a lot, just, you know, I was very, very tan, and my hair was a little had a little blonde tint to it. But anyways, it was, I mean, there was a very strict way we looked. We have the family pictures where, you know, we're all, you know, and there's nothing like that happening behind the scenes. So it's a lot of presentation, and it took a long time to learn that. But just like telling you the story about, you know, trying to give you a different perspective with my dad and how he wasn't having me having friends that were Jewish, you know, when I started playing with that kid down the street and that I romanticized about their life because it was one of those very Beaver Cleaver type. I mean, I experienced it. They had me over a lot for a while, and it was, you know, I don't have any memories of that being a weird place. It was just an amazing place. And so my mom was, there was never a thought with her about another race or another culture or anything like that. In fact, she was very much into learning about that and understanding a little bit more about those things. But so it was always okay with her. And again, I also think looking back at things, I think that I do have memories of things. I think there was a little bit of poking the bear by putting me in those environments, which were great with me, great memories. But I think she was poking the bear with my dad, because she knew dang well that he was not having any of that. And she knew dang well what the consequences were if he got enraged about it. So anyways,
thank you to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. BetterHelp is the world's largest therapy service, and it's 100% online. With BetterHelp, you can tap into a network of over 30,000 licensed and experienced therapists who can help you with a wide range of issues. To get started, you just answer a few questions about your needs and preferences in therapy. That way, BetterHelp can match you with the right therapist from their network. Then you can talk to your therapist however you feel comfortable, whether it's via text, chat, phone, or video call. You can message your therapist at any time and schedule live sessions when it's convenient for you. If your therapist isn't the right fit for any reason, you can switch to a new therapist at no additional charge. With BetterHelp, you can get the same professionalism and quality you expect from in-office therapy, but with a therapist who is custom-picked for you, more scheduling flexibility, and at a more affordable price. Get 10% off your first month at BetterHelp.com/selfcaresavage. That's better, HELP.com/selfcaresavage.
With her, she again was overall neglectful of my sister. I got a little bit more attention, but she still exited the scene. You know, to become a semi-professional bowler when you have two kids in the 60s, you know, and you're still doing a little traveling, doing some tournaments and things like that, you know, you're not really engaged in your life. And I think this was part of my mom's escaping and stuff too. Anyways, we talked a little bit with my dad and him putting my mom in a mental hospital because he played around a lot. And I think that was a big deal. It was starting to be very evident. I do remember my dad coming home one time and he had a very, very bloody side of his ear. I couldn't see it very well. And sometimes when my dad came in town there, it was a lot of times it could have been in the morning. It was very, very late at night. And he usually came home he was drunk already somehow or hungover. So the story from my mom, when I had that memory, when I asked her one time, I said, I remember dad coming home and he had this, you know, his ear. And she said, well, yeah, his ear was hanging off halfway because he was playing around with this guy's wife and he caught him. His name, my dad's name was Jack. Well, we can call him Jack. Caught him and beat the hell out of him and tore his ear halfway off. So this is what she was dealing with. And so if you can imagine that, and then so imagine all the other times, that's where I think I'm connecting the dots around the paperwork stating when my dad put her in the hospital was that she wasn't acting right. So knowing my mom's history and trying to hopefully give you all a little history, I hope you're understanding maybe while she probably wasn't acting right. I can even though there's a lot of early times I don't remember around that and a lot of things, I can see that. And then when they finally went through it, she was in there a little bit and gave her the diagnosis of heartbreak. I think that was big. But with her, my oldest aunt, her oldest sister, that was killed. That was somewhere in that time. My parents were still married. So I'm not so sure that maybe that could have been a trigger for her to get more aggressive with her, with what she was doing, or that was part of the heartbreak diagnosis. Again, they won't let me have anything else. There's archives you can't get to, and then there's a lot they just won't give me, and I get it. So I could just tie some of these together, but I think I think a death of a sister and those two sisters again, understanding they were pretty close overall, that was, and never having any indication there was a lot of closeness with anyone else other than with my mom and my dad, my granddad. I think that was part of her issues with her mom was that was his only child, his real child. So I think he probably was being partial to her from indicators that I get. There's so much into this. You can read into it and maybe navigate through, but so anyways, our world again was explained a lot through the chaos with my dad. So I think my mom, it just got to a point, and I don't really know what brought it to her finally getting to leaving him. But I think I told y'all, or I'd spoken earlier too, about how we lived in this one particular house where mostly I grew up in. And they sold it because they bought property further out they were going to build on. We were in this apartment. That's when they actually physically split. There was a few other things going on. They thought I had polio at one time from back then because I actually became paralyzed for whatever period. It was a couple of week period of time. I came home one day from somewhere playing out wherever, and I could only walk on my tiptoes. And my legs were freezing up. And again, I was maybe six then. I didn't really know how to communicate that. I didn't really know what was going on. So I really didn't tell anybody until the next morning. And the reason I had to do that is because I couldn't move my legs when I woke up. So, anyways, thank goodness my dad went around, because I'm sure somehow there would have been a connection to me being lazy or whatever instead of actually happening. Anyways, when my mom took me to the doctor and she communicated with my dad, from my understanding from the stories, you know, he was like, you know, just, is he fine? Just take him, do whatever. But what she did is she needed him to come take me, and he wouldn't because I couldn't walk. So here's my mom. This is my mom. And even though she again had her own issues and negative stuff going on and wasn't very good at being that type of parent, a lot of ways, when it came down to it, she'd stand tall. I mean, there was not any time that she wouldn't, go through her own pain to protect her kids. My sister doesn't have that affection or affinity with her, and I get that. There's a lot of separateness. I don't know about that. A lot of things she tells me I didn't realize were happening with her and my mom. But anyways, my mom, I ended up having to climb. Now, I am six. I'm not like, I don't weigh 200 pounds. But I'm, you know, I'm a tall, I was always kind of tall and everything. But, and she was 5 foot. You know, she's just, so I had to end up, she couldn't pick me up, carry me. So I had to end up her kneeling down beside the bed, and I had to get up to where I wrapped my arms around her neck. And then my feet were dragging. Remember, she's 5 foot tall. I'm probably right there, or if not, even at that age, I was always tall. But, and I remember, and as she tells me, she was dragging me, and my feet were dragging, and I was wrapped around her neck, and she just, you know, to get into the car, put me in the car. A lot of this, I don't remember exactly what was going on or what was happening getting in the car. Put me in the car. I do remember getting there. We had to park in a parking garage and go through that same motion. Get into the building. Go through that. I have no idea why nobody's helping or what the deal is at that point. I can only imagine that my mom was, you know, I can see that happening. But anyways. So they end up doing a lot of tests. They assumed at the beginning I had polio, because remember, even though polio, we were just starting to get into vaccinations and things like that, that were required in the 60s for those kind of things. So I don't think I had the polio vaccination. I think that's why they assumed it was. It ended up being some kind of virus, and they didn't even really catch it until after a couple of weeks I had actually started regaining. You know, and I started moving back, you know, to where I could walk and stuff. So it's just one of those weird things. But that's again part of how things were happening back then. And that doesn't even have to be relevant. But my sister through this, I do feel like I need to touch on that with my mom. And after even talking to my sister recently and stories I've learned, you know, I used to not recognize my sister for anything. We were always detached from each other somehow. When my parents divorced, it affected her a lot more, because again, she had that relationship with my dad. So I was seven ish. So she was nine ish. So, it had a lot more effect on her. And I don't think my mom was real beneficial with that for her. I was just happy it was over. Here's how my mom told me. Again, these are just stories that are very intriguing to me. So I come home from, somewhere, may have been school, and he's not there anymore, or his stuff is gone, all that kind of stuff. I don't know exactly what that was. But she, hey, I need to talk to you, whatever. I can't remember exactly those things, but I do remember what she did. She kneeled down. She grabbed my Like I had told you a story before about grabbing my wrist when I wrecked my dirt bike. You know, she was real good about coming down to your level and kind of explaining things, even if it was really harsh or rough. But when she would explain that to me, but that's what she did. She took my wrist. I always remember that. And she said, I need to tell you something. She said, your dad and I are split up or whatever exactly the words were. So, of course, I didn't have any feelings around that. I was indifferent around it. And I wasn't, like, joyful about it. I just was like, it wasn't like my dad had any kind of relationship. I was like, oh, no, where's dad? You know, and all that. I just didn't really care because I never cared when he was there anyways. But this is the first thing she said after that. And it was, I know it was to soothe me or to whatever, if she felt I was having issues or whatever, and it was probably planned out, but this is exactly what she said, because I hate it, especially when I got older and that six going into school and all that, even though that was a lot of the style back then was buzz cuts. I hated it. I hated that constant every other week and just buzzing my head, and they just didn't like any of that process. Had no control. It was a lot of, you know, when you're a kid, and you don't have any control. Even if it's something that might be good for you, it's like, you know, I don't want, you know, you want to be decide for yourself. And I know I was trying to decide, but, and I think she knew that because she goes, do you want to grow your hair out? That was the next thing she said. I was like, hell yeah. I didn't say hell yeah, but I was like, hell yeah. That was there. You got some emotion out of me. It was like, hell yeah. So, anyways, that happened. But back to my sister. My sister was extremely protective of me. And it wasn't still, we've talked about things and we still talk about things, and talking to her a couple of days ago to get her consent on talking about this stuff. We talked about some other things. And I asked some questions about some other things that were on my mind, some of these other stories I won't tell now, but she said, well, here's what happened, and here's what, and I said, how do you know that? She goes, because I was there. And I said, you know, and so I started understanding that she was extremely protective of me and tried to protect me and tried not getting in front of my dad or between us. Look, the monster scares everybody. Even if you're not the target, you're still going to be, you don't want to be. But she tried to get me to be quiet, you know, to not talk when he was around or do certain things that she knew triggered him. And I started remembering some of those things. So this is some stuff that, again, like I say, I'm always a work in process. This is where now when you start learning about others that you're trying to heal and forgive from, and you start trailing back, and then my sister and I really never talked about a lot of stuff. Because one of the things we'll talk about that happened, you know, in the 70s with both of us and this step situation, you know, it was pretty awful. But there's just things I remember about that now that was like, she was just so protective of me. So I feel so grateful having gone down this track, first of all, because this is another reason that's a positive. My sister and I are actually connecting more through this, because she has been someone to help connect the dots, and now she's just seeing how beneficial it's been. There's just a lot of positives to it. Anyways, so my sister, even though I don't remember a lot of that, I know now that she was, and I'm so glad I get that now. And I also am happy that she's able to talk to me about a lot of these things that went on with my mom, and because it does make sense. It's not, I think there's some things that aren't going to make sense, but a lot of it does make sense. My mom was a certain way. She was these certain ways and things that happened. So, anyways, I think telling the tale of my dad a lot explains a lot what was going on with my mom. I just wanted to fill in the blanks with her history, and then just talk just quickly about the last, after she left my dad, kind of those, so we're talking probably 67, 8-ish. So there's that couple of years that we're trying to get settled, you know, in, and my mom with my sister, and it'll give a little lead into the what the brought after that. And so again, a lot of effect on my sister. They actually, she did go see a therapist, I know, for a while. Not sure how much my dad was involved in that, if at all, but my mom did take her to therapy for a long time because she was really struggling with that. She's a lot more sensitive around things. She's also, like, when I, you know, got some permission to talk about more things from her a couple of days ago, it was made very clear she's not interested in revisiting a lot of those things herself, but she will whatever I need from her. So anyways, jumping back to where, so she's 9-ish years old in therapy and things like that. So what we're doing is we end up, I don't know the exact dynamics of exactly the movement, but from that apartment with my dad after they were separated, we ended up being still in the Dallas area. And now I'm getting in at 7 to 8. So I think we're getting into maybe third grade-ish. So I don't know. Sometimes it's hard to connect. So we end up on this. Look, we didn't have much money. My mom tells a lot of these stories that I'm not necessarily I believe anymore, but she said my dad did. She said to leave him and to make the break very clean and easy. My mom said what she did was just say, I don't want anything. And that's how it was written. And there was a lot of some contradicted information around that through the years. And I can maybe touch on it or not. Doesn't really have that much relevance. But so anyways, we do end up in this little 3-bedroom house in not the greatest part or area. And so my mom is now fully engaged in going back to get her degree. She goes into a junior college in Dallas to finish up from Tech. Couple of years before she goes into getting her bachelor's. During this time, it's just immediately her. She's right into working, doing odd things. I think she was working in some facilities that, you know, that had any something to do with a mental health. She was modeling. She was became a model down. It's called Market Center in Dallas. It's like a mainstay where they come in every year and they truly do all the fashion stuff in this area for Dallas. But so she became a model up there and did all that a lot. And I'm going to tell another story but about some of these things that some people – these are just some amazing things that happened through some of these weird lives. So my mom, again, her men stuff. So she's back at El Centro, and this is when we're in this little house. So now she starts – she's she had me when she was 25. And so I'm 7'8". So she's 33-ish or whatever in like that. So she starts dating a kid that's in college there. And his name's Tommy. But Tommy was cool. He was not really damaged. So he wasn't – he actually was, you know, he would play with you a little bit. Just kind of – he was, you know, but he wasn't certainly overless. He was younger. He was not interested in, you know, being my dad or anything. So this is my mom's right back at. Just with whatever's happening in her life. But then someone at modeling at the Market Center. And this person happens to be a manager for some country and western acts back then. So I don't know if you're going to know these people. But what ends up happening, and he is, got to remember my mom's, you know, model. She's a little dynamo. She's a beautiful woman. And, you know, she's... And my mom was not into just a certain personality. I mean, it wasn't just that my mom was had some superficial stuff going on and what was going on with her too. And this gentleman was, I remember he, my memories, it feels like he was kind of obese. And he was not a very attractive man. And he did it to me, remembering back then, he had a little smell to him. So this is from my perspective, and I'm not saying my mom, you know. Anyways, what he did was, is he, they took me and my sister on one of their little trips. He always took my mom places. He had a private jet. So we get to go ride on this private jet. So you kind of know my history and where I'm coming from, things like that. And I get to go on, a private jet. So I'm on this private jet. He flies it. He's got his pilot license kind of deal. And he brings me up and lets me sit next to him. It's not big sum, back then. I can't tell you really even what it looked like on the outside now as much of a memory. But very, very small. But I remember it not being, at that time, I wasn't scared. Anyways. He was that kind of guy, come on up here, Scotty, and, sit over here and put something on my head and, you could hold the wheel and do those kind of things. So, those are the impressions that come on a kid's memory. Because I didn't know what he did and I didn't know who he managed because I didn't know these people back then. Didn't care. The only person I might have known back then was Johnny Cash. There he is. Of Johnny Cash, and that Folsom County prison record had come out, and I played it over and over and over and over again during that time. Anyways, so we're flying to Nashville. That's where we're going. We're going to Nashville. And we're going because he manages, I don't know if you know a guy named Bill Anderson. So if you look him up back in the day, he's just one of those, they call him cronies or whatever, or croners or whatever. But he's just that clean cut looking kind of guy. He also had a show. He had a variety show on TV kind of thing. They did, certain things. But maybe you've heard of this guy, if you know who Johnny Cash is Merle Haggard. So Merle Haggard is also somebody. So let me tell you about the memory of Merle Haggard. The reason I'm bringing these things out because these are a lot of things that got buried for so long that were actually, oh my gosh, I was exposed to this and it was actually this person. So we went to this concert. I don't remember. I guess we were there, of course. And both these people managed. One was Bill Anderson, who opened for Merle Haggard at that time or whatever. Or maybe they did whatever together. But it was after the show. Because we're in the back of this building, wherever we were, in a small trailer. It was Merle Haggard's little trailer, for whatever they... Now, get this. He looks at me and my sister, and he says, I want to play you guys a song. Okay, now, remember back then, it's kind of cool. The guy's got a guitar, and, Merle Haggard. The way he looks, and he's... So he played, I don't remember what the song was. My sister doesn't either. But he commences to just start picking on his guitar. But here's what I remember. Here's what I'm focused on is his fingers. Because what he does is he's smoking and he takes the cigarette and he puts it in his guitar up here in the little, kind of sets it in there. And then he moves his fingers over here to start picking. But what I remember is his fingers just being completely yellow from all of the tobacco. So that's what a kid, or at least I was like, very focused on. Was how he put the cigarette in his guitar and then his yellow fingers. But so how amazing is that? I mean, to me, looking back on it, even though I don't look at it the way I look at it now. This is part of 100 stories, million stories I have that I buried. There was all this good stuff because when you're traumatized, you layer all that starts just oozing everywhere. And the longer it goes that you don't heal and forgive from those things, it just, the longer time goes by and the more dirt and dust and everything just keeps piling up and you're living life and you're screwing everything up and your relationships suck and because you're living out of survival mode still as an adult and you're just doing dumb stuff. And so you're blaming. And so as you continue to blame harder, everything just keeps piling on. I couldn't even see any of that stuff anymore. So when I talk about this and I'm trying to connect the dots of what the benefits are of doing the work. Even if you feel like somebody doesn't deserve to be forgiven or this just that it was that unforgivable thing, whatever it was, you're not forgiving them overall. For them, you're forgiving them for you. And then you start peeling back all these things. Once you do that, you start, I've made several friendly reminders about it. You start peeling things back and you start talking about things differently. When you heal, you start talking about it differently. That's when you're able to start helping people. So there's so much amazingness into accepting these things, going back and doing some work on, again, healing yourself so it clears the way to heal other people. And then you start, these things will start coming up that are amazing. Thank you for listening, and I hope my podcast has helped you in some way taking the path to becoming a self-care savage. Make sure to subscribe to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.